Okay, if you're ready, the next case is number 14-1373, Konica Corporation against Jamin Kingdomway. Mr. Nowak.
Good morning, Your Honor. Keith Nowak for Konica Corporation. Let me begin with a discussion of the term sealed tank. As the court knows, during the claim construction in the district court, the district court relied exclusively on the dictionary definition of the term sealed to conclude that a sealed tank was a tank that was completely closed to the entry or exit of material. The issue, therefore, on this claim construction term is whether that claim construction decision excluded the preferred method of extraction. And that's what I can discuss for this in the beginning.
Can I just clear up where we are? You're contesting four claim constructions. Is that correct?
Actually, Your Honor, the inert gas atmosphere we waived.
Okay.
We're not discussing that today.
But, well, however many claim constructions you're contesting, do you have to win all of them for us to reverse?
Good question. I believe that we do, Your Honor. Yes. Yes.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. All right. So,
let's be clear. So, if we reverse on sealed tank, are you saying that we can't reverse on that? We'd have to find in your favor on all the other claim constructions?
No, what we're saying, Your Honor, is that the claim constructions that were reached by the district court, we need those claim constructions to be reviewed by this court and remanded for a claim construction based on the intrinsic evidence.
I think maybe you didn't understand my question then. My question is, even if we agree with you on one or more of these claim constructions, if we disagree with you on one and affirm the district court's, Does that still mean we have to affirm the judgment here?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, that's correct.
Okay. So we're on the same page. So we can reverse sealed tank if we think it's wrong, or we can disagree with sealed tank. But if we agree with the district court on the ordering of the steps or the active oxidation constructions, we still have to affirm. Okay.
Well, Your Honor, I want to make sure it's clear. There was
use the microphone if you're willing to share with tell us your name.
Bobby Bowick.
Okay.
The 70 mole percent limitation was construed, but was not the basis of a summary
right,
judgment.
Right. Right. No, I don't even know why we're talking about that since it's not the basis of summary judgment.
Right.
I'm really talking about the other two.
It's really just the other two claims.
Okay.
So those two claims we have to win on.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, Your Honor. Let's talk about the extraction process. The extraction process is defined in the patent at column 16, lines 7 through 15. And it's described in example 8, and it's shown in figure 1. So let's take just a quick look at figure 1 in the patent to describe how the extraction process works.
That's not the exhibit that was objected to. Is that right?
No.
That's the one in the record?
Is that in the appendix?
Okay.
Where in the appendix is that?
It's not colored.
That looks familiar. All right.
I'd still like to see it in the appendix. Where is it?
That's somewhere.
It's figure one of the patent.
It's figure one of the patent.
Okay.
Okay, that's the one in the patent.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. In the patent itself, there's three types of extraction described. There's a batch process, there's a continuous extraction process, and there's a concurrent multi-stage extraction process. Figure 1 shows concurrent multi-stage extraction, which is the preferred method of extraction. The yellow pipes distribute the extraction solvent throughout the first three stirring tanks. This the cell-disrupted solution, which contains the seat that the Q10 we want to recover, is distributed throughout all six tanks, and the recovery is on the left-hand side. The point I'm making is a very simple point. The point is that the preferred method of extraction requires circulation through all six tanks, and that would not be possible if the tank is closed to prevent the entry or exit of material. So by the district court deciding on its claim construction, we've excluded the preferred embodiment of extraction. In addition, both continuous extraction, you could put that down, Bobby, both continuous extraction and concurrent multi-stage extraction is in the dependent claims. So with that definition, we've also lost those dependent claims. Now, Judge Gilmore in the Texas litigation had a different claim construction. And that claim construction was that the sealed tank meant a tank that would prevent exposure of the contents to the atmosphere. That was done for safety reasons. One skilled in the art would know that use of a solvent such as hexane creates vapors within the tank. Those vapors are flammable. It creates pressure in the tank. So you need to prevent exposure to the atmosphere of those hexane vapors. That's where Judge Gilmore came out. And bottom line, the fact that the definition that came out of the district court in California excludes the preferred embodiment of extraction. Therefore, we suggest that this court adopt Judge Gilmore's definition, which is supported by the specification, and makes sense. That's it on sealed tank, unless the court has questions. Let me move to the next one, which is the reducing the oxidizing the reduced Q10, which is the second claim term at issue here. Here, the district court construed the term oxidizing the reduced Q10 by adding three new claim limitations to the claims. Those claim limitations were oxidation must occur with an oxidizing agent, oxidation must occur in a separate step, and all or substantially all of the reduced Q10 must be oxidized in that single step. So let's take the oxidizing agent first. The oxidizing agent is described in the patent at column 17, lines 8 through 9, as simply an example. It's one example of oxidation in the manufacturing process. It is not required. It is not preferred. It's simply an example. In addition, there are 8 examples in the patent which describe the recovery of both oxidized and reduced Q10. In those 8 examples, only one talks about use of an oxidizing agent. If an oxidizing agent was required, we say it would have been in all of the examples. And finally, of course, the oxidizing agent is mentioned in the dependent claims. If we added that to the independent claims, it would violate the doctrine of claim differentiation. All right, now let me address the most important issue as far as I'm concerned, which is the separate oxidizing step. The district court, by concluding there was a separate oxidizing step, and that disruption, oxidation, and extraction had to occur in the same in a fixed order, that decision was the basis for construing the other remaining claim terms other than sealed tanks. So let's look at the claim language and see if the oxidizing step can only occur between disruption and extraction, and whether those steps have to be in a particular order.
Well, this to me seems to be your biggest problem in this case, because the common sense reading of Claim 22 has steps. It talks about culturing something to get reduced CoQ10, disrupting the microbial cells, and then oxidizing, thus obtained reduced CoQ10. So it just the simple grammar of that is referring back to the CoQ10 that you cultured and disrupted to obtain the reduced. How do you get around that?
Yes, and I'd like to give a different perspective on the claim language, Your Honor. So looking, here's claim 22 and 33, which include the three elements that were construed. Let me get my notes here in the right place. Okay, let's look carefully at claim 22. There, the conjunctive and is used to connect the steps of disrupting and oxidizing. The term and then is used to connect the claim limitations, oxidizing and extraction, right? There's a difference here between the terms used to connect these two claim elements and the term used to connect these two claim elements. This says and this says and then. Obviously, the patent holder decided to use a different conjunctive term when describing these three claim limitations.
Can you point me to... where in the patent?
Claim 22 in the patent, Your Honor.
Yeah, I know. Where in... What column is this? Where in the appendix is this?
All right.
Yes, about figure one. That's appendix page 66.
Yep.
It's attached to...
Where's claim 22? Is
claim 22 is appendix page 79.
I'm having a hard time. Okay, I've got it now. Go ahead.
You got it? Okay. All right. I think it's pretty clear that when you use the term and then, the patent holder was saying that extraction here in claim 22 is coming after disruption and oxidizing. However, if and then means extracting is coming after, what does and mean? If the patent holder wanted to say disrupt and then oxidize and then extract, the patent holder would have said so. He didn't. He made a distinction between those connective, those conjunctive terms. Right? And in addition, in contrast, claim 33 does not use the term and then. It uses the term and, extraction and oxidizing. Just looking at the claim language, if and then...
I'm sorry for being dense, but is the gist of what you're telling me is that the disrupting and oxidizing states, the first two things can go on simultaneously, and that the extraction is what has to occur after?
That's correct, Your Honor. And I can support that in the specification because oxidation occurs throughout the process. And the specification is very clear on that. So we say, I say... The fact that the patent holder used two different terms here, it must mean different things.
I understand your argument, and it seems to carry some weight, but the problem that I have is that that second phrase connected by the and has also includes the word thus obtained reduced COQ, suggesting that the COQ10 in the first step has already been obtained.
Let's talk about that for a second. I agree, all right? The disruption step goes on for some period of time. It doesn't happen instantaneously because you're disrupting all these millions of microbial cells. When you begin, it doesn't say disrupt the microbial cells to obtain all of the reduced Q10. It says disrupt the microbial cells. That process starts as soon as disruption process begins. At the same time, or shortly thereafter, because oxidation is occurring throughout the process, you begin oxidizing the reduced cells that have been obtained to that point. I mean, the specification can't be any clearer that oxidation is occurring during this step.
Oh, I think it could be a lot clearer than this. It's very difficult to read this grammatically either of your views.
Why wouldn't the patent holder have said disrupt and then oxidize and then extract?
Well, why did he put the word thus obtained in? That references back to the obtaining the reduced COQ10 from the disrupting part.
Of course, but it doesn't say that this disruptive step has to be completed before it's oxidized. There's nothing that says that.
I understand your position.
And there's nothing in the specification that says that. And I mean, the same argument applies to claim 33, that the term and is used and not the term and then. My argument simply is, and of course the court understands, they wouldn't have used those two separate terms unless they meant two different things. So let me just briefly go to the specification and provide support for what I just said. Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, and one more thing, of course. Let me back up a moment. It's clear in the specification itself, at column 8, 58 through 65, that oxidation is occurring during the culturing step. That's column 8, line 58 through 65. In fact, oxygen is added during the culturing step, and it's undisputed that if in the presence of oxygen, the reduced Q10 will be oxidized. So it's certainly happening during that portion of the manufacturing process. at column 17, line 20 through 25, it says it's not necessary to protect the reduced Q10 from an oxidation reaction.
Where are you reading, Counselor?
Column 17, lines 20 through 25.
Okay.
That's Appendix 75.
Okay. Let's hear from the other side, and we'll save you rebuttal time.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
And please, the court.
Mr. Walker.
Timothy Walker for the Shenzhou defendant and appellee. As a preliminary matter, because inert gas atmosphere has been, that issue has been waived, the judgment of non-infringement as to independent claims 1 and 11 and all their dependent claims should be affirmed. There's also been no argument here made that that the district court misapplied the its claim constructions to the accused process. In fact, plaintiffs didn't even address that.
But wait, when you only have a few minutes to talk
yes.
on what's not reached.
Could you get to the ordering steps? I mean, it seems to me that that's the heart of this case, or at least for me, and I don't.
The ordering steps.
Any clear way to read those claims definitively, one way or the other?
I think all I can do is agree with Your Honor is that there is clear sequencing language in the claims, and the sequencing language is unambiguous. It requires.
Well, I think there's, as your friend pointed out, the and then suggest sequencing language one way, and the thus obtained suggests sequencing language the other way. What are we to do with that?
I don't think that the difference that he is pointing to mandates that particular reading of the claims. The just because it says that it's again the use of the word thus obtained, oxidizing thus obtained, you don't have the thus obtained reduced coenzyme Q10 until you've disrupted the microbial cells. So that's the step is disrupting the microbial cells to obtain reduced coenzyme Q10 and oxidizing thus obtained reduced coenzyme Q10. So you have to disrupt first, according to this, before you oxidize. You can't do one before the other.
Isn't this issue tied into the district court's construction and use of the word converting all or substantially all of the reduced coenzyme Q10, where does that come from? Where does the all or substantially all construction come from?
That has to do with maintaining the sequencing that's been claimed here. The claim language...
It's neither in the specification or in any of the claims that you have to have all or substantially all of the reduced coenzyme Q10 to have been... involved in converted.
It is not specifically said in the specification or in the claims that it needs to be done that way, but in order to preserve the sequence that is in the claim language.
That's my point.
Yes.
It's substantially all appears to preserve a sequence.
Yes.
But if we find that that's an imported limitation, then what does that do to the argument regarding the sequence?
I would say that it's not an imported limitation if it's required in order to maintain the claim sequence. That's our understanding of it. Is if you allow multiple oxidation steps, then you lose the sequence because now you're oxidizing, extracting, and oxidizing, and that doesn't fit either of the independent claims.
But we're told that oxidation occurs spontaneously even at the beginning of the process. So you're not saying that it has to be totally rigorous.
No, that's a separate step. And I think we need to be clear here about what the culturing step is about and that it's and what we're culturing for. And again, we don't want to forget what the initial and the threshold limitation is. We are culturing cells to make reduced coenzyme Q10 at a ratio of at least 70 mole percent.
But we're told that that step is in the prior art, so that what we really are concerned with is this continuous process. Is that correct?
I would say that's only partly correct in the sense that the, yes, a lot of this is in the prior art, and I think there are novelty issues that aren't ripe here, but the requirement is that the cells be cultured to make 70 mole percent reduced. That is a ratio, and you achieve that during the culturing, and while you're culturing, while the cells are alive, they need oxygen. And so while you're culturing, you are providing oxygen, and the purpose of CoQ10 is as an electron transport molecule. So it undergoes a cycle of, on a molecule-by-molecule basis, it's being cycled, it's being oxidized and reduced. But the claim limitation is a ratio of 70 mole percent, and I think that the oxidation
limitation... But we're talking about the sequence issue.
Yes.
Why is it that the sequence can occur even if the all of potentially all of the CoQ10 is an oxidizer? I mean, why is there a requirement that it be all or substantially all?
Well, I think the intent was to preserve the sequencing. I think maybe what Your Honor is...
My point, if you don't have substantially all, is a why can't the sequencing be preserved? I don't see the dependence.
I think that the... And maybe I'm, if I can just rephrase what you're asking me, is that what I think was intended to be precluded by this claim construction is multiple oxidation steps and oxidation, partial oxidation throughout the process. I think that was what was intended to be precluded. And if you're suggesting that one could meet the claim limitations by oxidizing, oh, say, half of it, and then no additional oxidation steps, then maybe that's what Your Honor has in mind. And I suppose that's possible. We know that this is specifically claimed as an industrial process. We know that there is disclosure of the use of oxidizing agents, which are intended to achieve a substantially complete oxidation. And for those reasons, we think that was that was really the basis for requiring the substantially complete oxidation. Is that one of ordinary skill in the art would not think that an industrial process to make oxidized, you would deliberately or you would not oxidize at all.
So you're suggesting that we should read that limitation in because that would be the best practices? I mean, what makes a difference if their patent claim results in an inefficient process and they don't oxidize all the reduced CoQ10 they obtain, if they only oxidize 50% of it and use that? What makes a difference in terms of reading the claim language?
Well, in terms of reading the claim language, I think I've explained it as best as I can, that the intent of that provision and the intent of reading that in was to preserve the sequencing. If the sequencing is preserved, and if what's precluded is some additional...
Saying, but I don't understand why, even if you preserve the sequencing, that last step has to oxidize all or nearly all. It just says oxidize. It could oxidize 25% of it. It'd be a dumb way to do business, probably, but it still doesn't seem like that would disrupt the sequencing.
Again, I think I've given Your Honor the best answer I have, which is that it's claimed as an industrial process for making coenzyme Q10, and one of ordinary skill would think that you're trying to do it all, and again, you have to, something's got to be in the claim construction to preserve that sequencing. But again,
why is it all or not? The all or substantially all, don't you still win if you get it the specific order and that last step is oxidation? You don't need the all or substantially all.
You're correct that we win no matter what. because at least the Shenzhou process has, again, there, the Shenzhou process has oxidation across, you know, across its process. That's undisputed. And so as long as the sequencing is preserved, there is no, there's
you're,
no
you're saying in order to preserve the sequencing, we have to affirm the district court's construction of all or substantially all.
I don't know that that has to be done. I do think that the sequencing has to be preserved and that multiple oxidation steps ought to be precluded and that oxidation during extraction needs to be precluded because that's what the claim steps say.
Is it conceded that there's no infringement on that construction?
That's my understanding. They have not discussed at all the accused processes.
Well, they haven't gotten there, but that was, my question is, and I think we started out with the assumption that that would end, that that would end the entire case or not?
It's our view that yes, it would. If the sequencing is preserved and you cannot have multiple oxidation steps in a single process, then Shenzhou does not infringe. And there's nothing in the record before the court to explain how the XKGC process infringes.
Did you want to share time with your colleague or
yes,
take the rest of it?
Yes, he has 5 minutes, I believe. So that was the intent.
Okay, proceed. Mr. Nienstadt, how do you pronounce your name?
Nienstadt, thank you. Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. I was going to address the third claim limitation in this case after my colleague had addressed the first two, and the third limitation is the 70 mole percent limitation. Now, I heard Judge Hughes's point, and to that point, the reason that it does matter somewhat in this case, first of all, is that Kaneka appealed that particular claim.
But the district court didn't rely on that in its judgment.
That's correct. The district court did not rely on that in its judgment, but
well,
if...
Aren't you just asking us to render an advisory opinion on a claim construction?
Well, it's in this court's discretion, of course, whether to affirm that, but it's, you know, it's arguably...
It doesn't matter what we say one way or another to the judgment on that claim construction, though.
Well, so to take one hypothetical, if this court were to reverse the district court's constructions on the other two terms, then it would matter.
You'd like an advisory opinion on that one when you go back.
Well, I guess I'd call it an affirmance, not an advisory opinion, because the district court has already ruled on that, and that particular construction was appealed to this court. So I think I would use the word affirmance, but it's certainly within the discretion.
But it wasn't
of
part
court.
Of the district court summary judgment, was it?
It did not. The summary judgment ruling on non-infringement did not hinge on that. That's correct.
So if we rule on that issue, we would be issuing a declaratory judgment or an advisory opinion of sorts.
Well, again, I'm not sure. Your Honor can refer to it however
our ruling on that issue does not impact the judgment in this case whatsoever.
Okay.
Is that – I mean, that's – I'm not trying to bully you into that, but that's – isn't that the case? Don't you agree?
Well, it would avoid the possibility of that term of the claim construction, again, being appealed if it went back on remand. And then Kaneka appealed back to this court, it would avoid that back and forth process.
That didn't answer my question at all. I mean, the question was, our ruling on this construction doesn't affect the judgment in this case. It may affect it down the line, depending upon if certain things happen.
That's right.
Whether we agree with you or we agree with them, whatever claim construction we give here is not going to change the judgment.
It would not change the judgment at this stage or on remand. That's correct. So I could address I could follow up on my colleague's points and the questions that Your Honors
can you tell me about this ordering thing? We've looked at the claim language. The claim language itself doesn't seem particularly helpful either way. Is there anything else? I mean, I know your friend pointed to some stuff in the specification. I looked at it quickly. Is there anything else that can give us some guidance here, either intrinsic evidence or extrinsic evidence of whether these ordering steps are required or not?
Well, first of all, if you look at the claim language itself, for example, in Claim 22.
That's not what I asked you. I just told you the claim language is not helpful to me. So what else besides the claim language can you point me to either in the specification or if there's any extrinsic evidence. We've been over the claim language very clearly. Well,
okay.
There are arguments on both sides in the claim language. If you don't have it, I know you weren't prepared.
I just wanted to address the then point, the and then versus and point, but I'll pull up the...
I apologize. I mean, I know you were prepared to argue the other point, so I just thought if you had an answer, easy answer, that's fine. But
our argument primarily, we think the claim language is extremely clear, and there are a number of cases from this court, Mantec v. Hudson, 1998 case, EPAS v. 3COM, 2007 case from this court, indicated that, for example, EPAS held, because the language of most of the steps of its method claim refer to the completed results of the prior step, EPAS must show that all of those steps were performed in order. Here you have numerous pieces of language to address the and versus and then point. The thus obtained, if you look at claim 22, the thus obtained term actually acts as a then term. So I don't see that and versus and then argument as valid. and there are multiple pieces of language like that. As far as this all or substantially all, which is part of the same construction, the reason it matters is because as Kanika's counsel has argued that in the preamble, the two independent method claims say that the claims comprise a number of steps. And their argument, Kanika's argument, is that therefore you could insert other steps. So if you construed any of the steps as not requiring all or substantially all of that process, then what you could do is insert additional steps. For example, if you have extracting and then oxidizing, and either one were treated as not processing all or substantially all of the CoQ10, then what you could do is, for example, before the extracting step, add another oxidizing step, and before that oxidizing step, add another extracting step. And you could add all these little steps where
you
do...
Would you agree that oxidizing occurs throughout the entire process?
Well, no, and that gets to the heart...
You think your argument is that it can only occur and only occurs in one of the steps.
Well, all or substantially all leaves the possibility for some de minimis or some small amount of oxidation or extraction that's occurring in another process. That's the part of... That's the substantially all part. But the only reason...
Is that critical to your position? Because they do say throughout the specification... that this reduced form just spontaneously oxidizes if there's any stray oxygen around.
Well, so first I'll answer, it's important to our position that it be a significant amount of the step occurring. Whether that has to be substantially all, I'm not sure, but, you know, at least 50%, something
like
that.
So there's no requirement that it be all or substantially all?
It has to be.
You're arguing it should be a significant amount.
Yeah, and I think substantially all could be interpreted. I mean, there's a slight, maybe there's a very slight wording difference
that
would be tolerable.
There, that was there on the district court to use that term.
Yes, the district court used that term, and maybe it could have said a significant, over 50%, a majority, or something like that. Maybe it could have worded it that way. But I think substantially all also makes sense. Now, to address the point about why does the patent discuss oxidation throughout the process, that goes back to how Kanika was able to get this patent in the first place. The entire point of this patent is that the prior art, there's a ton of prior art where oxidized CoQ10 is obtained by just allowing oxidation to occur throughout the entire process. And what Kanika did here is they tried to make an end run around that prior art by claiming first producing reduced CoQ10 and then in a separate step oxidizing it. That's how they were able to get around the prior art. And of course, from an industrial perspective, this is nonsensical because these are claims that are drafted solely to try to shoehorn infringement into them. Industrially, that makes no sense because you're protecting the CoQ10 from being oxidized only to later oxidize all or substantially all of it. And so this would be kind of an inefficient and very strange industrial process. It doesn't make any sense. So that explains why the specification talks about one thing, which is allowing the whole thing to oxidize the whole way through, which is how the prior art does it. And then the claims had to be narrowed down into this stepwise order. in order to get the claims allowed in the first place. And now they're trying to go back and shoehorn basically the prior art into their narrowed claims, which had to be narrowed in order to get them to begin with.
Okay, I think we have that argument. Thank you, Mr. Nista.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Noah.
Let me just address the last point that was made. With all due respect to my colleague, the microorganisms set forth in the patent only produce reduced Q10. The discovery here was the fact that those microorganisms produced enough reduced Q10, so when you oxidize it, you got more oxidized Q10. That's what the whole patent is about. So saying it's nonsense to produce reduced Q10 first and then oxidize it is nonsense. That's the whole, that's what we're talking about here, and it says so in the patent. I mean, that's the purpose. But let's go back to Judge Hughes' concern on the sequence, right? Let's keep in mind what we're trying to do here. We're trying to make oxidized Q10. That's the purpose of this. So oxidation occurring throughout the process is what we're looking to do. The Interactive Gift versus CompuServe case says, look at the claims first. If it mandates that the steps are in an order, so be it. If the claims language does not mandate that, look at the specification. That's what I did, right? I think the court would agree that the claim language doesn't mandate that those steps be in a particular order. And if you go to the specification and you see that reduced Q10 does not have to be protected from an oxidation reaction, and we're trying to oxidate it, that's the purpose of the whole process, it certainly, to me, indicates that oxidation is occurring throughout the process, that there is no separate oxidizing step, either in the disruption or extraction. And in fact, it says in the patent that disruption and extraction can occur at the same time. So how can there be a fixed order of the steps? And I'm backing up and looking at the industrial process is what we're trying to, that's what the patent was trying to cover, right? So in addition, of course, there can't be, I mean, what the district court is saying with that construction is the only time oxidation can occur is between disruption and extraction. And that doesn't account the fact that when you're looking to get 70 mole percent in the culturing step, you are oxidizing 30% of it right there. So that's another reason why the sequence of the steps is not clear. In addition, my colleague mentioned the fact that somehow culturing, oxidation in the culturing step doesn't count. I refer the court, and I won't read this, but if you take a look at column 1, lines 50 through 52, it clearly says that the microbial cells, which are the live cells, are being oxidized during culturing. That's all I have, Your Honor. We respectfully request that this course be remanded for a new claim construction with the district court. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all. Case is taken under submission.